Good morning to everyone. We will begin with introductions from the court. I am Mike Havokin, the Chief Justice, and now by order of seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman.
William Castle, good morning.
Stephanie Stacy, good morning.
Jeff Funk, good morning.
Jonathan Pappick, good morning.
And John Freidenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Our first case of the day is State versus McAleese. Mr. Leeske, are you here this morning? Good morning to you. You may approach, but before you begin, Ms. Osborne, good morning to you also. Do either counsel have any questions? Very good, and we appreciate, if you wish to wear a mask, you may. You don't have to wear a mask, but when you do present to the court, please make sure that you take your mask off. With that, Mr. Leeske, good morning. You may approach. You may proceed.
Going to the justices and visiting judge, appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today regarding this case. To start with, your honors, I would request 2 minutes reserved for rebuttal, please. As I'd stated, thanks. We appreciate hearing the case. The issue, especially as it relates to these IAP orders, is one that us in the defense bar come upon quite frequently, where we have issues where a judge has mispronounced sentence or made what we consider a void sentence in not ordering either vehicle immobilization or a ignition interlock device with a 15-year or any number of year sentence as far as revocation.
You agree that this is a collateral attack upon a judgment?
No, I do not agree that it's collateral. No, I do not agree that it's collateral attack on a judgment, Your Honor.
It's a direct appeal.
It's not a direct appeal. What we did is we followed the law as it relates to what we feel is a void judgment. A void judgment can be changed, and we proceeded in using a motion to vacate in order to proceed back in the original action to vacate a void judgment. And I believe that a void judgment can be modified at any point by the sentencing.
I think you're a step ahead of me in the analysis here. You don't think that's a collateral attack?
No, I don't believe it's a collateral attack. And so the State v. Barnes is one of the cases that the state cited when it says a judgment attacked any other way than by proceeding in the original action to have it vacated, revised, or modified as part of what we had looked at and looked at proceeding to vacate by reopening the original case in order to give the sentencing court the opportunity to change what we believe
so
to be avoided.
That's the authority that you're relying on.
Correct.
For that first step. Then when you're talking about void, would you agree that if the judgment is merely erroneous but not void, it would not be subject to being vacated?
I believe that the jurisprudence proves that out, that I think that the first step that the court does need to take is deciding what the nature of this decision is. If it is a void judgment or that an avoid sentence, then I believe the defendant does stand to have been found guilty but not actually sentenced through a valid sentence. And we'd even, some of the law we'd also looked at was State v. McDermott, which is 22 Nebraska 337, which states that even if a majority of the sentence is valid, but there is an invalid portion, that portion can be corrected. And that's what we're asking in this matter when we're looking to vacate the judgment.
Do you have any statutory authority or even common law authority for the motion you filed to reopen, vacate, and correct a sentence?
I believe all the cases, most of the cases that we cited discuss using a motion to vacate and a void sentence or an invalid sentence.
Do you have any statutory authority?
The statutory authority, Your Honor, I would go off of would be, first of all, 25-2001, just the court's power to vacate judgments and orders. And
that's civil cases, isn't it?
Correct, Your Honor.
We don't have any application here, and what have we said about the applicability of civil statutes in criminal jurisprudence?
Your Honor, what I see here is that if we are proceeding, and I know I anticipated the question as far as what procedure to proceed on, and I think that that's a question that we in the defense bar have been looking for as well, because several of the cases that we had cited stated that when a sentence is invalid, it can be vacated and corrected.
Aren't those cases on direct appeal?
Most of those cases, yes, are on direct appeal, or that they fall within the term of the court. And I understand that that's a consideration, but there's also some of the jurisprudence also follows that if a sentence is invalid or void, that it can be corrected and should be changed at any point in time. Now, as far as can I find the authority outside of the general powers of the district court? No, I don't know that there is direct authority. I think that's part of why we ended up in front of this panel today is on how we proceeded, because we have in the defense bar have proceeded on these cases either through motions to vacate or non-protonc actions. As the court's aware in the history of the case, we originally started with a non-protonc action that was not met favorably with the court. And then we have proceeded in similar type cases with those with a non-protonc before. And so in interest of county court level, trying to get the relief my client needed, we changed our approach to use a motion to vacate, believing that it was more broad and possibly more appropriate approach given the time frame that's passed in the matter and was not directly appealed.
Do you have any evidence to point us to that would suggest that the sentencing court didn't have either subject matter or personal jurisdiction over your client at the time of the 2010 sentencing?
I think the issue becomes again with the as I cited before in State v. Barnes, is that we're proceeding in the original action to vacate what we see as an invalid sentence and an incorrect sentence. And the if the court and what we cited,
you just changed lanes a little bit. You started right out saying it was a void sentence, and now you've moved over to saying it was an invalid or an erroneous sentence. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'd like to pin you down to a lane.
Okay.
So that I understand your argument.
Void is certainly, and I will, and I apologize for changing the language. I will note.
That's right. We all do it.
I'll note all the jurisprudence in case law that I have reviewed throughout this. I mean, we're going back to cases, sometimes even the 1800s. The language doesn't seem consistent, even though some of the concepts seem consistent. And so when I say invalid, I do mean void sentence, and one that the court was not legally authorized to make.
But we make a distinction, at least in our modern jurisprudence, between right invalid sentences and void sentences. You're not asking us to undo that.
No, I feel that, and based on some of what the state had presented in its brief, erroneous was more of the distinction that I think between void and erroneous sentencing is what some of the lingo or language, I guess, that I was trying to utilize and probably somewhat incorrectly. So I would stick with the void language in our modern jurisprudence.
So if you're in the void lane, mm-hmm, what evidence do we have in our record that the court lacked either subject matter jurisdiction or personal jurisdiction over Mr. Is it McAleese?
McAleese, yes.
Over Mr. McAleese at the time of sentencing.
At the time of sentencing, Your Honor, I'm going to back out just a little bit so I think I can hopefully explain better my position on this. One of the cases that we cited, and I understand has no jurisprudential value, value as far as this court is concerned, but I did cite State v. Cerda, which was a court of appeals opinion. The only reason I cited that was because it did go through a nice rendition of how the shall language in 66-197-01 regarding vehicle immobilization or interlock is mandatory by the court. The court must sentence the defendant to one or the other.
It's not really a sentence. It's an order that accompanies the sentence, isn't it?
No, it's. I believe that the language in Sir and also, I believe the language in Sir, first of all, states that it is a part of the sentence, that the vehicle immobilization or interlock device is actually part of the sentence. And Your Honors, I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Osborne, good morning to you.
May it please the court, my name is Jordan Osborne, Assistant Attorney General, representing the appellee, the state of Nebraska. This appeal raises the distinction between void and erroneous sentences. The parties agree that McAleese's 2010 resentencing order for DUI third offense contained an error when the county court omitted a provision related to his 15-year license revocation that should have included or required either immobilization of the appellant's vehicles or installation of an ignition interlock. This error was not brought to the trial court's attention by either party during the sentencing hearing or during the 30-day appeal period, and appellant did not file a direct appeal alleging a sentencing error. As a result, the sentence became final in 2010. Nearly 9 years later, then he files this motion in the county court asking for it to correct that error and include an ignition interlock provision. Appellant argues, as we've seen here today, that the county court had the authority to correct the error because he is asserting the sentence was void, or the state disagrees. This was merely an erroneous sentence. It was not void, and an erroneous sentence cannot be collaterally attacked. As a result, the county court, as well as this court, lacks jurisdiction.
Do you agree with your opponent that this is not a collateral attack?
I do not agree. This is a collateral attack. In State versus Barnes, the court talked about what was a collateral attack, what constitutes a collateral attack, when a judgment is attacked in any way other than proceeding in the original action to have it vacated, reversed, or modified, or by proceeding in equity to prevent its enforcement, the attack is collateral. This is not a direct appeal. This is a motion, and this is very similar to what happened in State versus Barnes. In that case, it's involved a sentence that occurred in 1994. The sentence contained an error because there was jail credit that was not provided for in the sentence. The defendant did not file a direct appeal. Several years passed, and then in 2018, the defendant filed a motion request for jail credit in the trial court, essentially asking the court for the same thing that appellant is asking, was asking for from the trial court in this case, and that is to correct the error. This court held in the Barnes case that the defendant's motion was a collateral attack on the judgment, and the same is true for McAleese in this case. A motion to reopen, vacate the sentence, and correct the sentencing order from 2010 is a collateral attack on the judgment. Absent any explicit authority or common law procedure permitting otherwise, which there isn't any, only a void judgment may be collaterally attacked. So that brings us to the distinction between void and erroneous sentences. This court has stated that in the absence of a timely appeal, even an erroneous sentence cannot be corrected.
So what is a void sentence?
A void sentence, this court has stated that unless there is a lack of personal or subject matter jurisdiction, sentences containing errors are merely erroneous. They are not void. In Sanders versus Frakes, this court stated that a judgment is void when the court rendering it lacks subject matter or personal jurisdiction. And here, there's no dispute that the county court had the legal authority over McAleese and over the subject matter of the criminal offense, which was a DUI, third offense, a misdemeanor, to impose a sentence on the appellant. The sentence imposed complied with all of the statutory provisions except for a single omission that was previously discussed. And although erroneous, it's not a void sentence because the county court had that proper jurisdiction over the matter and the parties.
Was this part of the sentence?
I do think that this provision is required as part of the sentence. I think the DUI, as this court well understands, there are all kinds of errors that can happen at sentencing, especially in the DUI context. There are a lot of requirements in the DUI statutes for sentencing provisions. And I think that this is one of those sentencing provisions. I do think it is probably part of the sentence, and it is required. I think the statute uses the language shall include one of those two options. it wasn't included in the order. And so I think that is an error, but that does not make it void.
Not part of the sentence, where would we be?
If it were, I'm not sure if I understand the question.
If it were not part of the sentence, where would we be?
I guess if it's not considered to be part of the sentence, and I don't know that there's an error at all. And I don't know that there would be anything to correct. But even assuming that it is part of the sentence, it's just merely erroneous. It does not make it void.
I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller-Lerman. So if our jurisprudence is correct and we go forward, and if this is correct that the trial judge failed to state XYZ, where does that leave the defendant, that he does not have to obey those terms that he was failed to be ordered to follow? Forgive my English. he doesn't have to follow the stuff he wasn't told to do, right?
Well, the 15-year license revocation is still part of the sentence. So his license is revoked. He doesn't have a license. So he would have to comply with that provision. If he were to drive without a license, he would be subject to additional criminal penalties for driving without a license.
So that's the first part that about which he was properly advised, correct? The 15 years. But right. He wasn't ordered to immobilize the vehicle or install the ignition lock. So he doesn't have to do those things. He may not do those things at his peril, but he hasn't been ordered to do those things. Is that correct?
He hasn't been ordered to do those things. I think that the purpose of the ignition interlock is to allow for somebody, after the statutory authorized period of time has passed, that they then can drive a vehicle as long as they follow the requirements of the ignition interlock and they have it installed in their vehicle.
So in this case, he's seeking the benefit of the ignition interlock device during the 15-year revocation.
Correct. I think he wants to be able to install an ignition interlock so that he can drive. And unfortunately, the methods by which he could have corrected this error have long since passed.
So if he'd done a direct appeal and said, Judge, you didn't authorize the ignition interlock device, that could have been an issue on appeal that could have been dealt with and remanded back for resentencing.
Correct. It could have been corrected on direct appeal. This court is well aware that happens frequently. I think under State versus McDermott, it actually could have been corrected even prior to a direct appeal during the 30-day appeal period. If it was brought to the district court or the county court's attention that an error had occurred, either party could have asked the court to correct the omission within the 30-day appeal period prior to the perfection of an appeal. And I think that under McDermott, that would have been appropriate. So those are two ways that it could have been corrected in the proper time period. But now we're well beyond 9 years, but at the time that the motion was filed, almost 9 years had passed and that judgment had been final for almost 9 years. We are well past the period of when he would have had the ability to correct that error. And at this point, as this court has said in prior cases, in the absence of a timely appeal, even an erroneous sentence cannot be corrected. So I think he's just sort of stuck where he is.
Let's ask you a statutory question real quick.
Sure.
Following a direct appeal, what statutory vehicle would one use to challenge a void sentence?
A void sentence, after the
direct appeal? Following the direct appeal.
I think you could go through post-conviction. You could also go through state habeas. If you've served your, it depends on the factual situation, but state habeas, I believe you have to have served the appropriate sentence and you have to be illegally being held in custody.
That would not be the case in this case.
Correct. That would not apply here for a couple of reasons.
What would one do with this factual scenario?
Under this factual scenario, the direct appeal or correcting the error during the 30-day appeal period was his opportunity to correct it. At this point, he's not in custody, so post-conviction is an option. Obviously, that's well beyond the time available, and state habeas would not be an option. He's not in custody, and
none of those remedies, post-conviction or habeas, can apply at all to a license revocation with a ignition device.
Well, state habeas.
Could they possibly?
State habeas would never apply in that situation because it's not void. But post-conviction, theoretically, I think if you couch it in ineffective assistance of counsel terms, theoretically, I think that claim could be brought.
So if the court had given him a 15-year or 20-year license revocation and they didn't direct appeal it, after the 30 days, he's just stuck with 20 years of a license revocation? There's no ramp.
I think that would be correct. It's not a void sentence, and there isn't any statutory or other common law authority for bringing that before the court.
So it would have to be outside the court, so you'd have to seek a remedy through the executive branch in the part of the process. If there was going to be anything.
That could be another option, I think, because I don't know that going through the Department of Motor Vehicles would.
Well, they can't ignore.
I don't know that they could change an order from the.
Doesn't this beg the question as to whether or not this is really part of the sentence?
Well, given that it's shall language in the statute, it seems to me that it's part of the sentence. But if this court disagrees, if the court believes it's not part of the sentence, then I don't know that it's actually an error at all. Then,
it wouldn't be a sentencing error under that scenario. But that doesn't mean it's not an error if the statute requires an order imposing one of those two restrictions on somebody convicted of a second or higher DUI.
Well, I think you would still have the same issue of this being a final judgment that hasn't been brought on direct appeal, and there isn't anything about the error that makes it void. So I don't know that that would ultimately change whether the county court or this court has jurisdiction.
So I don't know if I ever heard an answer to Judge Friedenberg's question about what the remedy is if a sentence is void and the person is no longer in custody. If something happened rendering the sentence void and there's still something happening there, but the defendant's no longer in custody, by what vehicle does a defendant bring that question of void sentence to a trial court?
The general rule in Nebraska for void judgment is that it may be attacked at any time in any proceeding. And I think that the case law in this state has indicated there are some exceptions to that. So I think in the general sense, if this was a void sentence, a defendant could bring a motion to the court to correct it. But there are some exceptions to that, and that that includes, for example, a defendant cannot file a motion to correct a void sentence in the trial court if a defendant has a collateral attack that could be asserted under the Post-Conviction Act. There are a series of case law that talk about that if you have the opportunity under the Post-Conviction Act, you have to pursue that. So I think the answer to the question would be it depends. It depends on the factual situation and whether any of those. There are a few other exceptions I don't know would apply in this situation, but.
I beg your pardon, Justice Miller-Lerman here. So if the sentence slash orders or sentence plus orders are just wildly off compared to the statutory authority and there's no direct appeal, defendant's not in custody, so therefore not amenable, is that right, to post-conviction and habeas, and then the remedy is what?
Well, if it's a void judgment, lacking personal or subject matter jurisdiction, I think that there are more remedies available. If it's just merely erroneous, there would be fewer remedies available. And I think.
And that was, yeah, I beg your pardon. I should have said, say it's erroneous, not in custody, not post-conviction, not habeas. What is a former driver to do?
Well, I don't think there is a remedy in that situation. Unfortunately, that's the situation that this appellant is in.
Isn't the remedy actually the direct appeal?
The remedy, I'll clarify that. In the situation that we are here, where direct appeal has passed and that's gone, there are no further remedies.
So there is a remedy.
There is a remedy.
But we're just,
we're just past it.
We're just missed.
Correct. If there are no further questions, the only other thing I would just mention is that we are asking just for the clarification. We are asking that the court dismiss this case for lack of jurisdiction, but also clarify the language, the confusing language. And I think that.
Before you sit down, does it make any difference if a direct appeal was not actually taken?
Does it make any difference as to whether it was
what the potential remedies are?
If a direct appeal was taken and the issue wasn't assigned and it wasn't noticed as plain error by the court, I don't believe that it would be any different than someone who didn't take a direct appeal at all. So unless there are further questions, we'd ask that the court dismiss for lack of jurisdiction and also clarify some of the confusing language. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 1 minute and 44 seconds.
1 minute and 44 seconds, Mr. Leesy.
Thank you, Your Honor, I appreciate it. And I appreciate the colloquy that was going on with state's representative, as I feel that this is, again, it highlights the issues of the difficulty in addressing incorrect or void or invalid or erroneous sentence in general. Something I did want to highlight that was based on one of the questions that was asked or clarifications earlier as to whether it's a sentence or not has to do with the either or language and the shall language of 60-6197-01. In that the license revocation really flows along with the ignition interlock permit. And when my client is sentenced to the 15-year license revocation, the ignition interlock permit is mandatory and should be sentenced as a part of that. Originally, when we first started to pursue this action, we requested a oral record of the proceeding, thinking that the trial judge, as the trial judge originally sentenced my client the first time, to probation did include ignition interlock permit in the sentencing order. When my client was resentenced to jail time, failed to include that language. And we first posited that it may have been an error of either the clerk or an error that it just didn't make it into the record, which is why we initially pursued a non pro tunc. But since that record was destroyed prior to our motion, we could not see if that was the case or not, and that's why we proceeded again on.
I beg your pardon. I'm trying to clarify that which you seek. So the court has indicated that perhaps what you would seek is the benefit of an interlock device. Are you seeking an or otherwise? It's an or disjunctive language. Are you seeking an order that would direct your client to immobilize his vehicle? Is that a benefit you seek? Is that a benefit?
I'm not sure it's hard to say as far as, yes, it's a benefit to my client now, would have been at the time, it would have been part of the sentence. I think the court, in taking the issue back up, I think they would be constrained to the 15-year license revocation as being a correct portion of that order, and with the revocation would come then the requirement that the court order ignition interlock permit as well. And so I'm not sure that the court could substantially change the order in that sense to vehicle immobilization. However, from my client's perspective, I don't think it would matter much to him one way or the other. But that I'm not sure that the sentencing court would be able to modify it beyond having to add the ignition airlock permit order. Seeing no further questions, thank you, Your Honors. I appreciate the time and appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments in State versus McAleese. And the court will go on to the second case of the day. Counsel, you're excused. And the second case of the day is State versus Bryant.